thanks a lot for having me here. So today I'm going to tell you about work that I'm doing right now at BU at AmiCat. So I will present a model that's a composite Gluino, and I should say right now it's a Gluino, it's a particle with the same quantum number of a Gluino. It's not super symmetric. And I want to explore how we could distinguish such a thing from a supersymmetric Gluino. But before coming to the model, let me start with some general introduction about the LHC. What will we see in the LHC? Okay, so first of all, we want to learn about electroweak symmetry breaking, and we want to know if this theory of electroweak symmetry breaking is natural or not. So it might be natural, like in supersymmetric model, Higgs has a pseudo Goldstone boson, like little Higgs model, Randall-Sundrum. Like theory, Technicolor theory, Higgs theory. There's now many theories of natural electroweak symmetry breaking, each with their own strength and weaknesses. Or it could be in some unnatural things. Let's see the Suzy, maybe we'll see only a few random particles, maybe we'll see the Higgs and nothing else. Hopefully not. So now I'm more interested in this category and trying to see if it's so easy to tell all these theories apart. Okay. So what are the general features of the theory of electroweak symmetry breaking? Will there be many particles, like in the MSSM, where we see sort of 30 new particles just around the corner with a very long decay chain? Maybe that's what awaits us, but then you could ask why we've seen any of those particles. Or maybe you expect fewer number of particles. Maybe you don't need all these 30 new particles. So there's such models like the little Higgs model, which I will talk about in the talk, or more minimal supersymmetry, supersymmetric theory with the first two generation, for example, of Quark and Zepton, very heavy, out of reach. Okay, and if you have a fewer number of particles, well, probably the physics that remains has something to do with the third generation of quarks, because that's the one that's heaviest, and that's the one that's most strongly coupled to the sector that breaks electroweak symmetry. Okay, other general feature is that you can ask. Okay. About is, are there any stable particles? In fact, we might expect that there are stable particles just from the dark matter of the universe. Okay. And we know our favorite model, the minimal supersymmetric standard model, has a discrete parity, the R parity, that guarantees that there's such stable particles. And that leads to signature LHC of missing energy, for example. But here, I would argue that this might be more general than just in the MSSM, MSSM with R parity. In fact, in the little Higgs model, we can impose another kind of parity, T parity, which is very useful to avoid electroweak precision constraints, and which might also predict some stable particles. So there again, you could have some missing energy and dark matter. But more than that, this R parity of the MSSM might be more general than just the MSSM. Okay? Because in fact, what R parity can be written in that form. Okay? It's minus 1 to the 3 times baryon number plus Lampton number plus spin. Okay? So if you have a theory that respects baryon and Lampton number, you have this parity. You have R parity. And the only question is, are there particles that are odd under this part, parity? In fact, the model I will show you is of that type. Okay. And so it might be that missing energy signature might be generic among different models of electric symmetry grades. Okay, and now the subject of this talk is the gluino. Okay, why am I interested in the gluino? Well, it's a very important particle in supersymmetry. Okay, it's a color of tet, so it's produced abundantly at hadron colliders. Here at HE, here's some number, it's tens of picobarn for 500 GeV gluino. Of course, it's dropped quite quickly with the mass of gluino, but you can produce a lot of those guys. And they can have very long decay chain like this, and you can try to measure masses by looking at different the invariant mass of different combination in the decay chain. Okay. All right. So this might be a smoking gun for supersymmetry to see a gluino. So, well, since it's so important, we have to ask, is it really a smoking gun, or are there things that could fake a gluino? And indeed, it might be possible. For example, there are models with extra dimension that have the gluon propagating in an extra dimension, and then there's a so-called Kaluza-Klein resonance, so heavier resonance of the gluon, which might look a lot like the gluino. But in that case, it has a different, the gluon is a vector boson, it has a different spin, so you can try to study the spin to see that it's not really a gluino, it's not a fermion, but it's a vector boson. And there are claims that this can be done, that you can measure the spin. But here we're looking at something even more difficult in a sense, because the model I will show you as a composite gluino, okay, it's a strongly interacting theory in which the top is partly composite, and because we want to make the top partly composite, we also, I will show you, produce something with the quantum number of a gluino, even though it's not a supersymmetric model. And so this guy will have the same spin. So. Okay, so this model that I will show is related to little Higgs model. So here I have two slides to review the little Higgs models, even though for what I'm interested in, the little Higgs mechanism plays no role. Okay? So I'm not interested in the typical particle of little Higgs models. Okay? But since it's a so-called UV completion of little Higgs, I thought I should review little Higgs. Okay, so the essence of a little Higgs model is trying to make the Higgs a pseudo-Goldstone boson. Okay? So it's a Goldstone boson would be massless, but here it's not quite a Goldstone boson, so it will not be massless, but it still can be light. So in this model, the Higgs is light because of pseudo-Goldstone boson, just like the pion in QCD are light compared to the QCD scale. Okay. To achieve something like this, you have to be a little bit clever in how you produce your Goldstone boson. So the idea is that you arrange to have a theory with large global symmetries, okay, that you break spontaneously, okay, in order to produce a bunch of Goldstone boson, which are massless. But of course, you don't want your Higgs to be massless, so you have to break explicitly those large global symmetries, and you do it in a collective way. Okay, you break the symmetry collectively. That means that you need more than one coupling, either Yukawa or gauge coupling, to give mass to the Higgs or the Goldstone boson. In other words, your global symmetry is pretty big, and one coupling might explicitly break parts of the full global symmetry, but might leave enough intact so that the Higgs remain an exact Goldstone. But with two couplings, then the Higgs gets a mass, but it's a small mass. So that's just the idea. I won't get into much of the detail because, as I said, it's not so important for what I want to say. But, okay, so then imposing those very large global symmetries and those clever breaking forces you to have an extended gauge Yukawa and Higgs sectors. Okay, so you have new particles in the new gauge boson, new scalar particles, and new fermion, and those are the same spin partners that cancel the quadratic divergence to the Higgs, because, as I said, the idea was to make the Higgs light, okay, and so the quadratic divergence to its mass must be canceled somehow, and if you follow the rules, then it happens that you have partners that cancel the quadratic divergence, so you get some sort of general spectrum that looks like this, okay? Some extra vector boson, some extra scalar, and some extra tots, some extra quarks in the third generation. They're all responsible for canceling quadratic divergence of the W, of the Higgs, and of the tot in the standard model, and they're all roughly at 1T. So that's the spectrum of a little Higgs model, of a very minimal little Higgs model. Okay. Now, one thing that's important for us is that Golson boson, like ions, they get strongly coupled at some high energy. Okay. In the case of QCD, at lambda QCD, it gets strongly coupled. And you need a new description. Okay. Same thing for little Higgs. Little Higgs, as I showed, gets strongly coupled at a scale of roughly 10 TeV. And you need a new theory at 10 TeV, okay, a UV completion. Okay, so this UV completion could be any number of things. It could be a supersymmetric theory. It could be a new little Higgs model, or it could be a strongly coupled model like in 2CD. And that's the one that we want to study. Okay, but even though this UV completion is only important really at 10 TeV, if you build something, if you build a model at 10 TeV, you might expect that there's new particles that will be lighter than 10 TeV. So, okay, so the spectrum of UV completed little Higgs model might be richer than just okay these minimal set of fields that are needed to cancel the quadratic divergence.
Where do the two Golson bosons fit in the ones that get eaten by the WZ?
They're in the Higgs, because this is a model with the Higgs.
So they're just part of the big set of Golson bosons, that some of which become pseudo Golsons.
Yes. I mean, so here I said that you have a very large global symmetry that's broken down, but in the global symmetry that is unbroken, sits the standard model. Okay, so this spontaneous breaking doesn't break the standard model. It's the Higgs. I mean, here I really have a Higgs that breaks the SU2 plus U1 standard model. I don't in these slides go in the details of this.
So this is a bit different from technical, isn't it? This residual pseudo-Nambu Goldstone, that's the Higgs, is a CP even guy, right? In Technicolor, you generate lots of CP odd guys.
You said it was like QCD, but.
No, it's
not.
Really, well, it's not QCD in the sense that. It's not QCD in the sense that QCD break the electroweak symmetry. Here I have some global. I mean, it's just like QCD in the sense that pion are pseudo Golson boson, and here Higgs are pseudo Golson boson. That's the only analogy. Of course, now the Higgs do something more, okay? So that's a different potential.
Well, that's what I was saying. The Higgs breaks at the SU2 cross U1 at a lower scale.
Yeah.
So you don't say that that's broken at the high scale.
No, it's not broken.
So it's really a two-step.
There's two steps.
So
that's quite different. So you have, the mechanism itself is different in the sense that it requires you to be more clever in a sense. To arrange this Higgs to have the right potential at the end of the day to break the true symmetry in the right way. And I don't show any of these details. But it's the same in the sense that there is a UV scale above which you need some new theory. Okay. are many models of little Higgs, okay? And they're usually defined by their group structure, okay? Their global structure, and here I show the one I will use, littlest Higgs model. Okay, it's an SU5 global symmetry broken to an SO5, okay, with some large gauge. And the top sector, and a complicated top sector that includes new particles, okay, which
well, I have a little bit more to tell about
the top sector, but
I don't want to get into detail of the model.
Okay, and so you need a UV completion, and here's one that was proposed by these people, okay. It's a strongly coupled UV completion. So you have a strong dynamics at 10 TeV, okay. And it has this a little bit complicated structure. Let me go through it quickly. You have a strongly coupled gauge group, an SO7 gauge group, but okay. SO7 doesn't play any role, but in what I want to say, you have a large flavor symmetry, so you have a lot of particles, okay, that will then condense and form the field of the little Higgs, just like in QCD, quarks makes pion and such. Here, those SU11, those 11 field, they will get together and they will condense and they will break part of this, an SU5 subgroup of the SU11, and they will break it to SO5. And again, I rewrite the gauge symmetry of the littlest Higgs.
Right.
So in this model, the gauge symmetries are put in by hand?
Yes.
No, they're, or are they residual from the SO7?
No. There are weak gauging of the what's the full global
symmetry.
Right. And they're part of this SU5. And you have, so you have to be weakly gauge some part of the thing.
So then there are a number of other SU11 gauge bosons that must be very heavy.
No, you don't gauge the full SU11. You just really gauge this guy, okay? But you extend these bosons to the UV theory at all, okay? But no, I won't gauge the full SU11. Just gauge what I need to. There's extra field because of anomaly. So here's the spectrum. Okay. So here are the 11 field I was talking about. And so those field, when they go together, they will make other fields of my theory. Okay. So I have here 5 of them that are charged under the electroweak group. Okay. So the left group of the standard model is the diagonal combination of those two SU2s. But so that's why these are doublet of the standard model SU2s. And those are colored. And these are the guy eventually I'm interested in. Okay? There's a colored guy and the anti-color. And those guys will form baryon that would be the top. But these are my 11 flavors at above 10 TeV. Okay. Now below 10 TeV, what happens is that those guys start to condense. Okay, those guys in the SU5 global symmetry will condense and break the SU5 to SO5, and those guys will make the top. Okay. Oh, and I should mention also that not shown here, of course, there's not the full. The full SU11 is explicitly broken to SU5 cross SU2, cross SU3 by a small mass term. Okay. It's important for how all the masses come out. But okay, I won't again explain it in detail. Okay, so that's just what I said before. These 5 field form meson basically that gets a vacuum expectation value and break SU5 to SO5. And in this breaking, the full gauge symmetry is broken down to the standard model. So for these fields, I can just write a non-linear sigma model, okay? Just like in QCD, I can write a pion Lagrangian in that way. Again, details here, it's not so important. And from this extend gauge symmetry, I get extra gauge boson. From these meson, I get, okay, I get the Higgs, but I also get extra scalars,
just as I advertised.
And now we come to the top set term. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is in this model that baryons of the field, okay, can make tops. Okay, so if you take one guy that was charged on the electroweak symmetry, one of the psi phi, with a color guy, you make such SU5 multiple, and one of which has a quantum number of the quark doublet. And similarly, you can do the similar thing with the conjugate field, okay, which contains a quark singlet. Okay. Now, of course, those are composite fields, so they're pretty massive. Okay. A priori, it would be at 1 TeV. But I mix them with some elementary fermion, so I add a new doublet, a new singlet, and at the end of the day, what I obtain is standard model field, that's standard model third generation. So this I do, so this corresponds to third generation, and some heavy partner that are responsible for canceling quadratic divergence to the Higgs mass. Okay? So now I showed you how all the minimal field content of the little Higgs arise in this strongly coupled sector. And the top sector, add W prime, add the scalar.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand the flow.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want composite top? Or is
yeah.
that just a result of...
No, in fact, I would want composite tops. That's why I put them in those guys. Okay?
And the reason is that the Higgs... Okay. Oops.
The Higgs sits in there. Okay, it's a meson. Okay, so the Higgs is also a composite.
Yeah.
And I want the top to couple strongly, well, with order one coupling to the Higgs. Okay. So I make it part of the composite sector so that it has significant coupling. Yeah, that's a good point.
So the compositeness is only revealed above the second scale, right?
Yeah, it's revealed at 10 TeV, yeah.
So the usual little Higgs model only says, okay, well, there's a capital T and there's a pi,
right,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And so there's cancellation of
yeah.
some important quadratic divergences. So he's going a step beyond and say, okay, what is the ultraviolet completion, and
mm-hmm.
then imagining a certain
yeah.
scenario for that, and then saying, okay, well, in this scenario, then it's natural to have these other heavy partners with some
yeah.
interesting
yeah.
properties. I think that's the logic anyway.
Yeah. And yeah, so those guys are all at 1 TeV. Okay. I mean, so this something you have another, this one subtlety of the model. I mean, since those are composite, you would imagine that ultimately they're 10 TeV. But there are some tricks that you can play, so at the end, those composites are at 1 TeV.
Is the bottom composite also?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because here it's more natural to have, well, okay. Nothing is completely composite. There's all of these mixing angles. But here it's natural in this theory. What you do in usual littlest Higgs model is you ignore which guy? Most of these guys. Okay? You just add one partner. And that's really the minimal thing that you need to cancel quadratic divergence. But in the UV theory, it's more natural to have something that fills out the full SU5 multiplet. And it includes the full quark doublet.
But only the third generation quarks are...
Yes.
Not the tau.
Yeah. So those guys I ignored. And the reason is that since... Anyway, now I'm at 10 TeV, everything is composite. I'm not worried about canceling quadratic divergence due to the first two generation or the taus. Because they have smaller tau. So I... Up to 10 TeV, it doesn't really matter that they give quadratic divergence. So that's part of the philosophy of the little is that I do things only for the third generation. So at the end, all the physics will involve third generation. Okay, but these are not the only baryons that you can form.
you need to those guys to make the toss, but then you'll also have, okay, as a gift to you, some baryon that are made out of 2, 5, okay? And if you count, okay, so there's many of those guys if you split the 5 into the doublet and the singlet. And it turns out that they have the same quantum number of Tixino, Vino, and Wino. And then you have the thing that was introduced to make the tough, the psi 3 and psi 3 conjugate, they go together and they make a color octet. So they make a gluino. And those guys, because, as I said, our parity is not something special to Suzy, okay? Something that happens if you have a theory that respects baryon and lepton number. So there is an R parity in this model. So the lightest of those guys is stable. Okay? And it could be the dark matter. Okay? I don't know if it gives the right critic abundance, but in principle, it's a dark matter candidate. And it will give also missing energy signature. And all the mass of all those guys are related by the big flavor symmetry to the mass of the top partner, the one that was responsible for canceling quadratic divergence of the top. And this top partner should be at 1 TeV so that it can place its role of canceling quadratic divergence. It seems to be at 1 TeV. So all of those guys are TeV-ish particles. Okay, so then we ask, what's the phenomenology of such a model? Well, first there's the usual phenomenology of little Higgs model that has been sort of studied. New vector boson, new scalar, and new fermions. Okay. Now, those guys might be hard to see because of electric precession constraint. You don't want them to couple too much the usual quarks and leptons. Okay, but the top you certainly could see. Okay, another question: could you test the little Higgs mechanism? Could you test that really this top had the right coupling to cancel the quadratic divergence to the Higgs? Okay, if you could do that, then you have a good indication that you really have a little Higgs. Okay, so this might be possible. But in addition now to have the minimal little Higgs spectrum, you also have all these gay genomes that together give missing energy signature. Okay. Then you have also a sector that looks a lot like Suzy. Okay. So can you tell in such a model if you're seeing a Suzy model or a little Higgs model? Okay, so that's the question that we wanted to ask.
Could you say a little bit about why the B is different?
Which one?
Why the B quark is different from the T quark?
So in here, I made the full doublet composite. Okay. I mean, I was sort of forced to do that, and it might not be the best. But I didn't, for example, introduce a heavy B quark singlet, right? Now, of course, you can worry about electric precision measurements, Z2BB bar, and stuff like this. And it's true that we'll put constraint on all these mixing, okay, how the composite quark doublet mixes with the elementary guys. But something we didn't care about that in this study. Okay, so now we're interested in the phenomenology of the gluino, of this composite gluino. So how does this gluino decay? Well, to see how it decays, I have strongly coupled theory. And at low energy, I will just write down all four Fermi operator involving the strongly coupled field. Okay. For example, these operators. Okay. Now, the thing with the same color have their Lorentz indices contracted together. So I have Gluino at the top, conjugate, and
a sort of Higgsino, okay? Suppressed by a TD scale. Okay? So that's, for example, for Fermi interaction I can write down. And this would indicate a decay of the gluino to two tops. Okay? And if you produce two gluinos, each of them goes to two tops. It's a final state that's quite messy with four tops. Okay, so it's a bit too messy for us, so we want to look at something a little bit still messy, but a little bit less. Okay, so that's a gluino with a bottom, a top, and a chargino. Okay, again, Lorentz indices are of the same color thing are contracted together. So then there's different contraction that you can you can write down. This gluino contracted with the bottom, with the top, or with the chargino. Okay. And here I put a square here because those are interesting because these guys could be there in supersymmetry. Okay. Those would correspond to the exchange in off-shell bottom or an off-shell top. While these guy would correspond to the exchange of a charge octet. Okay, so they're not there in supersymmetry. Okay.
So I was about to ask, is there any analog of this bottom, for example, in this theory?
Yeah, in this theory, there's no direct analog to either a bottom or a stop. Okay, because the stop, which cancels quadratic divergence of top in SUSY, now is replaced by a new top partner, which
right.
is even. Okay, so this guy could be seen. It's a real resonance.
I understand. And your composite structure doesn't naturally weave in any bound state
no.
of the bottom-like variety.
No.
Okay, so you really have to then not have a chain decay in this model. It
yeah.
really is the four Fermi
well,
operator.
Yeah, those four Fermi. And I will show that. Okay, well, okay. Let me mention also those operator. Okay, if I imagine different quantum number for the chargino, and before there were doublets. Here, if the chargino is a triplet or a singlet, I can have this structure, but not the corresponding structure that is absent in supersymmetry. So this might look
very much like supersymmetry. If those are more important. Okay, so how does it compare to a gluino in supersymmetry? Well, so this is sort of the gluino that you would like to have, okay? One guy that has a very long decay chain, and at the end decays to a lepton, so emit leptons that are nice, and then you can say a lot about this decay chain by making invariant mass distribution, for example, looking at endpoints and such. But you could also have a supersymmetric scenario, as I said before, that's a bit more minimal, where there's no light lepton, okay, and there's no light quark of the first two generations, where everything, all the action is in the third generation. And that could be the case, since the third generation is somewhat special. Okay. And for example, if you have a SUSY scenario like this, where the gluino has to decay to a top and a stop. And the stop goes to a bottom and a chargino. So this part of decay looks a lot like a four Fermi interaction, especially if the stop is off shell. Okay, then I get something like this. Okay. If I have an off shell stop, effectively what I have then is a four Fermi interaction. And that looks a lot like the four Fermi interaction that I wrote before. If I have off-shell's bottom, I have this guy. Okay. But I never have the other combination I wrote. Yeah, there's no operator of this form where the gluino is contracted with a chargino. It would require the exchange of a color octet. Another difference is that even though in both the composite gluino and SUSY, I have these operators. I might expect that in SUSY, those coefficients are very different. By very different, I mean maybe they differ by
factor of 2 or 3 or 4.
Okay, because
it depends on the relative mass of the stop in this bottom, okay, which might be different. Okay, why? In the composite model, because I had such a large flavor symmetry, okay, in other words, because my strongly coupled interaction, didn't care about the identity of all these 11 fields, was treating all the 11 fields as the same field, then you will imagine, you will think that to the first approximation, these two coefficients are very close to each other.
Okay. And as we will see, it will make somewhat of a difference. Okay.
Okay, so now we're sort of in a situation where we made the two theories look as much the same as possible, in a sense. Okay. That the same sort of operator, so that the same final state, the same initial state, and so the kinematic of the decay is the same in both cases. Okay. But so one thing that you can notice, though, as I will show, is that the invariant mass distribution of top and bottom is different in both cases. Okay. And in principle, this is something you can measure. Of course, it's hard to measure. Or if you can measure it well, then there's a difference. So I showed here, without any, okay, this is really the real distribution. There's no test of any kind for some choice of parameter. The 1 TV Guino, the 300 GeV Giardino, and 200 GeV Neutralino. And the red curve has the operator that corresponds to a change of its bottom. And this one is the new operator that's absent in Susan. In fact, this operator wants this distribution to peak more to the right, the red distribution.
Okay, so there is, in principle, a difference between the two things. Okay, so let me show you just a bit in more detail why it is, and so I can show my dad's plot.
So I show the dad's plot of the three-body decay, okay, of the Gluino going to a top, a bottom, and a Giardino. Nice thing about the data spot is it only cares about the matrix in it. Okay? And if I have the Suzy operator, I call these guys the Suzy operator, sets to zero, the matrix element is only a function of MTB. Okay? It's not a function of the other variable MTC. And it starts with MTB squared. Okay? So it has this vertical band structure.
And the other does not have this band structure. Okay?
This is a Suzy, sort of a Suzy scenario where I have only the CB. Of course, and it would be very nice to make those plot in real life, if you cannot. But that sort of explain why I have this rise here, is that this matrix element starts with MTB square, okay, and not with a constant. And here what is shown, okay, is the case where, as I said, in a composite model, you think that CT and CB are related. They're sort of the same sign, the same size. Sorry, they have the same size. And if they do have the same size, in fact, you can show that the operator are not independent. And you get the other composite operator in that case. Okay, so even with CT and CB in the non-Suzy case, I get the same shape. Okay. So this is a nice feature. It predicts that in the composite case, I always have sort of this shape.
Now,
so of course, and measuring TB is hard. Okay, and but here is the only angle that we have. So we wanted to do sort of a simple analysis, just to see how hard it is. Okay, so I'll show you the result. But okay, so I mean, people don't. I couldn't find in the literature much attempt to measure the endpoint of MTB, for example. Okay, but there are such a couple of attempts. Okay. And so we do a parton level analysis, okay, just to see. And the big problem is combinatorics, okay, and we want to see how bad it is. So we do a parton level analysis, which we smear the parton, okay, and put some detagging efficiency and some separation between parton, okay. But that's how far we went. So we asked for between 4 and 7 Jev with DT greater than 400 GeV, one hard Jev, two B tags, and a large missing energy of 300 GeV. Okay. So we consider again the same spectrum as before with a gluing of 1 TeV, 300 GeV chargino, and 200 GeV neutralino. And we try to reconstruct everything hadronically, okay, because we want to get the invariant mass. So we ask for two non-BJF to make a W, then we match it with a BJF to make a top, and then find another BJF to make an MTB. And that's the result, okay? Now, of course, okay, so we generated 100,000 events, and the PP to two gluino cross section is roughly speaking 300 femtobarn. So that corresponds, roughly speaking, to 300 inverse femtobarn. And we get something like this from the composite, sort of tends want to be on the right a little bit, but okay. And at the end, these plugs, there's 20% that have the right combination of MTD. The rest of and really. The problem, of course, is combinatoric background. If I remove combinatoric background and just keep just the cut that I put in, and I see the peak of MTD, it can be much more easily distinguished. Okay. So then we can we reuse this combinatoric background? Well, one of the problems in this thing is that we had two gluinos, and the two gluinos were decaying to the same final state, top-bottom and chargino. So we thought maybe it's a bit easier if one side could decay to two bottom and then neutralino. So we added this operator. Okay. We had hoped that it would help a little bit. It did not help so much. Same kind of plot. Okay. Yeah, so there might be a clever way of reducing the combinatory background. But one of the things that we quickly tried is some sort of sideband analysis, where you look outside the mass of the top to estimate what are the background coming from, for example, not reconstructing the top right. Okay, and you see a small improvement, but probably not sufficient. Okay, so then we looked at, okay, so this was the worst case where the SUSY was off-shell, okay? So you really had the four Fermi operator, the same four Fermi operator as before. So we asked, though maybe it would be easier to distinguish the two scenario if this top or this bottom is on-shell. Okay. Then if you look at the MTB distribution, the endpoint is different than for off-shell stuff. Now the endpoint depends on the value of the stuff mass, whereas before it was just the difference between gluino and chargino. So, okay. This is a comment. But you can also, there's another thing that you can look at is now you have the MBW endpoint that might help you. Okay. Because you don't really expect to see any structure in the BW point from the non-SUSY case. In the SUSY case, you might. So here we chose for the SUSY case another set of masses. So the gluino is 1 TeV, and we put the stop at 500 GeV. Okay? And we plotted MBW. Okay? And now MBW is a little bump here compared to the composite case because of the on-shell stop. Here the hole is there's a big top contribution. then maybe you have
slightly more hope in that case. I don't know. Okay.
Now, what if you start increasing the stop mass? Okay. Up to the point where it's going to be off shell, what happens? Okay. Well, MTB. Now, as I said, the end point is at the different places because the stop is on shell. So we compare the MTB. Again, this has no. This is a real theoretical distribution. Okay. But now with a different set of masses, so that the end point matches the Suzy case. So the end point of the composite, I changed the mass of the Chargino in the composite case to match the end point somehow. And, well, there's still a difference in shape, okay, but from our previous experience, we don't think that this MTD, we don't think we can see the difference in MTD once we put any sort of realistic effect. So we look at the MBW, where before there was this bump. Now the bump sort of disappearing, okay? Because of the mass of the stop is larger, so the endpoint is, before it was really a spike here. Now the endpoint is more like here. So. But maybe still it's possible to see that stop directly. So that's the other hope, is that if you produce, of course the stop is heavy and this production, cross-section, these masses is not as big as the Luino, but maybe you could see it. Okay? Maybe you could distinguish this guy from the Luino production, basically by asking for less jet. Okay? Now, we didn't do a careful analysis. Again, as I said, we just did a parton level analysis. Now we ask for less jet. Okay? That might not be so good, for example, to see it over a standard model background. Asking for less jet might not be a good idea. But at least if you do that at the parton level, then you kill all the Luino signal when you retain some sort of stop signal. So maybe you could see direct production of the stop. Okay, so that's my conclusion. So we presented the model that had a composite Luino, a particle with the quantum number of a Luino, but in a model that did not have Suzy. Okay, that's sort of surprising. And it might be generic. I presented a very specific model, but it could be generic for this class of model, because after all, it came from the fact that we wanted to have the top to be composite. Okay, so if you have such model where you want to make the top composite, then it might be generic if you get the Luino. And it could be very hard to distinguish from a supersymmetric scenario if the third generation is lighter than the rest. Okay, but we show that there is at least in principle information in the shape of the invariant mass distribution. Okay, in the MTB distribution. Of course, it's hard to see, but maybe with a better technique, it would be possible. Those two things apart. Now, of course, there might be situation that might be better. The stop and bottom are light enough that they're produced on shell. Okay, there's no corresponding there's no corresponding thing in the composite model. So, the stop and bottom are produced on shell, and maybe you can distinguish those at least.
Go back to your last two transparencies on the Luino case. This one.
Which one?
I just want to look at those MTB.
You want to look at the MTB
distributions?
Something like this?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
That looks impossible to.
Any statistics?
No, I mean, you need better technique to remove coming up. As I said, maybe we try this simple-minded sideband analysis.
and it helps a little bit, maybe it can be refined. And
I mean, what leads to that difference? What is the underlying effect? Did you say that? It's just the fact that there's no intervening bottoms? And
yeah, it's just the difference in those. Well, there's two things.
Two body versus three body.
No, because here they're all three body decays. Everything here is, even the Susie case, it's a three body decay.
So,
because
it's an extra operator.
It's this operator that has this difference. Okay, where is my.
Do you have any real idea of what the relative normalization between the new operators and the normal operators should be? Would you guess they're about equal in weight or something?
That's the thing I was saying. Is that.
I cannot find a good transparency. Okay, all these operators.
It turns out that in the composite model, I expect those two coefficients to be the same.
Yeah, that's right.
And in that case, they give the exact same effect as this operator. So in this composite model, I really only get this operator. And because this operator has TV contracted with
together, it turns out that its matrix element looks something like this. Okay, start with MTV square. So they're sort of, it wants to go to zero as MTV goes to zero.
So while back to those distribution.
While
I'm sorry, just.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Well, let's see. You had those formulas with C.
Yeah.
One C equals zero and one.
Yeah. So as long as in the Susie case, this bottom and this top don't give like exactly the same contribution, I have something like this. Okay, where it wants to go to a constant at low MTD. Okay, if you look at the matrix element, it starts with a constant, with like n blue, you know, the fourth power, something like that. Okay. Now, of course, one of the bad things, because I have a top, is a kinematic limit, so it wants to go down here. Okay, if I somehow at the bottom here, which doesn't happen in those composite models, then it would be better because I would plateau all the way up here. Okay, while this guy starts with an MTD square, okay, so it wants to go to zero faster than the other guy.
So. You said that you get the red curve. Let's see, I'm confused here. So you get this bottom and the stop were exactly degenerate.
Yeah, then I would get twice the blue curve.
Twice the blue curve.
So the red curve here is in the situation here I showed where only this bottom contributes.
This bottom, okay, that's where I got confused.
So if this bottom, both. This bottom, if there was some degeneracy between this bottom and this top, then these things would be completely identical. Completely identical. If not, then.
So it's just the Lorentz structure of these operators?
Yeah.
And you can fear it's one into some other combination of the other.
Well. Yeah,
there's these four operator, and in fact they can be reduced to three. So that's it. When these two have equal coefficient, they're equal to these. So, but it turns out that even if I have one of those and twice of this guy,
for example, I still get the same sort of curve.
I guess if the bottom and stop are type operators or equal coefficients, then it's as Bob says, he infers it into that other guy. Is that correct?
Yeah. And then they become.
It's a little bit hard to see at the top.
When you say you have an ultraviolet completion, you still have a. Than the other families?
Yeah, so the other families are just elementary up to vertex.
Okay.
But do they need to be elementary in this model, or could they also?
This is a good question. I mean, in this model, what I didn't show is that in this model, what they did is to have some kind of SUSY model, like yet another scale, which you might not need to do, and you can put the other generation in, but then you have to worry about flavor. Because 10 TeV is not enough to take care of flavor. So then maybe the numbers dimension.
How are your power couplings generated to the
As I said, in the full model that I didn't show, there was some SUSY sector at a high scale, and that's.
So I guess there's still a normal Higgs, and that Higgs has normal ad hoc Yukawa couplings.
There's absolutely no flavor theory.
You mean there's another Higgs?
No, just.
Put in by hand.
You put it by hand, some coupling of
the usual Higgs to first two generation couplings.
The usual Higgs or his Higgs?
Well, his Higgs, but it's as far as
you
first
can,
two generations,
yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah. In this first two generation, you can couple it in the UV too.
But that coupling has to appear at the completion scale, because that's where the Higgs originate.
It could be higher, and then. When you go down, translate into a coupling to the Higgs. That's sort of.
I'd say it might be more natural to have them all do the same thing.
Quite amusing that all these new particles and they really reproduce a SUSY spectrum. We thought it would be interesting to stand there.
Question with